With a round wooden bowl tucked between his knees, Toli sat on a woven grass mat outside the summer hut of Hoet. The Jer went about their daily business around him, but he was aware of their constant sidelong glances, which told him that he was still very much in their minds. No one would ask him about what had happened last night as he stood before the fire unable to speak. That would be too impolite. Still, they would wonder, and the gentle Jer would watch him when they thought he wasn't looking. So Toli, quite aware of their scrutiny, pretended not to notice and slowly dipped his hand into the bowl for the sweet mulberries that were his breakfast. A shadow fell over him as he squatted in the sunlight, drinking in the musty fragrance of earth and bark and growing things. Toli glanced up at the figure which had come to stand before him.
You are leaving again.
I must.
I knew that you would not return to stay. You are needed, for there is trouble in the land.
You know about the white men's trouble?
It is not only the trouble of the white race. When darkness falls, it covers all. Yes, we know there is trouble in the land. Wind is a swift messenger, and the forest holds no secrets from the Jer.
Then you know the king I serve needs my help. His son has been taken from him by force.
Hoet nodded and leaned long on his staff before he spoke again.
And you carry the blame for this deed.
How did you know?
How else can it be that you are not with your master in his time of need? He blames you, or you blame yourself. That is why you ride alone.
Yes. Your wits are as sharp as your eyes, wise one.
When you did not speak last night before the fire, I knew. Though I guessed even when you came riding alone to our camp.
Then you knew why I could not speak.
Come. Come with me.
Toli set the bowl aside and rose, and followed the aged Jer leader through the village among the trees. The glances of his kinsmen followed him as they walked the length of the camp to where Toli's horse waited, already saddled, grazing in a clump of sweet clover at his feet.
You do not belong here, Toli. Go now.
Toli felt the color rise to his face. His shame burned within him.
You are right to send me away. I have dishonored my people.
It is not from dishonor that I send you, my son.
Toli's eyes darted to his elder.
Why does it surprise you? You have not turned away from your master. That would be dishonor. No, I send you for yourself. Go, my son, and find the white leader's son. Your life will not be your own until you have found the boy.
Toli smiled and gripped the old man's arm.
Thank you, my father. The knife in my heart does not hurt so much now.
Yes. Go, but come again one day, and we will sit together and share meat.
Toli took up the tether peg and gripped the reins, swinging himself easily into the saddle.
I will ride more swiftly with your blessing.
I have no blessing to give you that Winnowick has not already given. It is said that the king raises a temple to the One Most High.
Yes, the Father of Life is not widely known among the white race. My master seeks to make the name of the God Most High known to every man alive under the great heavens, so that they may worship the only true God.
That is most worthy. But it seems to this old one that where one temple stands, another may not also stand. Is this not true?
Yes, your words are true, wise one, and I would hear more.
It has been reported to me that there has been much night traveling in the forest by men from the east who also returned that way. I did not see them, so I cannot say how it is. But the white men's great temple of Ariel lies to the east, does it not?
You know well that it does. Thank you, my father. You have given your son a great blessing.
Toli turned Riv into the forest, and before entering the shaded trail, stopped to raise his hand in farewell. Hoet raised his staff.
Go in peace.
Hoet remained gazing into the forest long after Toli had disappeared, then turned and shuffled back into the Jer village. Nimrud could not believe his good fortune as he flitted through the shadowy passageways of the High Temple like an overgrown bat, his black cloak billowing out behind him like wings.
Such a stroke of luck!
The gods had sent the meddlesome Jair to the very steps of the temple.
That ridiculous high priest wanted to turn him away, would have turned him away, but I was there to stop it. And before the dog could run away, I had him bound and beaten and thrown into the cell with that mewling prince.
At first, the sorcerer had to fight down the impulse to finish the deed begun in Pelgrim Forest on the day of the hunt, to strike down the Jair at once. Even now, the old hatred fired his thin blood. But he was compelled by a greater prize to turn away from his long-nursed wrath at the one who had shorn him of his power, his precious magic, and had very nearly stripped him also of his life. The image of that day still burned in Nimrud's black brain. Durwin, a far inferior wizard, stood before him, and would not even protect himself, would not lift a finger to summon the power at his call. Not that it could have saved him.
No, nothing could have saved him.
And then, as Nimrud lifted his rod to deliver the lethal bolt and so blast that cursed hermit's bones to powder...
That arrow!
From out of nowhere it had come, striking deep into his flesh, sending the rod from his hand. Then there was the Jair notching another arrow into his bowstring. The sorcerer had pleaded for his life.
Don't kill me!
Those words had mocked him every moment since that day. He had been humbled before the bow of the Jair, but the young warrior had withheld his pity, had sent another arrow into his enemy's heart. It had exhausted every last living spark of Nimrud's power to transform himself into a raven and wing to safety. It was a long time before he could once again take mortal shape, for he had not even the magic left to change, but was forced to wait until the spell wore off of its own accord. And a bitter exile it was, trapped in that feathered body, prey to the elements and living on scraps of dead, rotting meat. But though he regained but a thread of his former power, the rudiments of mere child's dabbling still clung to him, the ability to make noise and light. Yet he had returned to seek his revenge equipped with an older and more pernicious art, that of treachery. The name of Nimrud the Necromancer had perhaps fled from men's memory.
So be it.
Nimrud's lies would do what enchantment could not. Of that he was certain. Yes, at long last, he would have his revenge. Oh, the gods were fickle and full of mischief. It took all one's cunning to outsmart them. Nimrud had done it all his life, and now they had finally delivered the victory into his hand.
Yes, oh yes. Soon that upstart whelp of an acolyte king will suffer as I have been made to suffer all these years.
Yes, the Dragon King would fall, and that barbarous god of his, that brutish Most High, would fall with him. The wizened old sorcerer clenched his fists. It was a sound to chill the marrow of anyone passing by. But no one heard it. He was alone, and savored the moment to the full, his black heart lifted in exultation. Before the sign of the Grey Goo stood Pym, a strolling heap of scrap metal and tools, bags and bundles and barter enough for any two tinkers. The hand-painted sign of a long-legged, long-necked, plump gray goose wobbled on its chain. The windows of the inn dark now, the door open, but silence within.
Tinker! Tinker, ma'am!
Pym waited, winking at Tip. The dog winked back with both eyes. There appeared a round, flushed face and the plump form of M, the innkeeper's wife. She waved her apron when she saw him.
Pym, you are a sight, you are. Come around again, have ya? Give me a hug.
Em threw her arms around him, and he around her. They were old friends and good ones.
Oh, it's good to see ye, Em. Yeah, you know me. I've been a fancy for one of your meat pies and pastries and a noggin o' your best. Wins just had to come back as soon as Wins finished away south.
You missed Em's cooking, eh? Well, come in with ya. We'll set a fork in a trencher at the board and put ya to it. Milk Butcher! Otho! We got us a guest! Look lively now!
Milcher poked his round bald head out from behind a cask he was rolling across the room.
Oh ho ho! Pim it is! Oh ho! Pim, good to see you, old friend. Come to visit, eh? Glad to have you, glad to have you! Otho, hurry up now! We have a guest!
A tall, boyish-faced man came into the room, carrying two small kegs under each arm. He grinned at the tinker and put the kegs down.
Pim and Tippa, is it?
Otho grinned boyishly. Milcher wiped his sweating face on his sleeve.
Whew! I've been at it since dawn this morn. Come and sit down with me, Pim. We'll drink a sip and fill our bellies.
Oh, don't you unstrubble yourselves for we!
Tip wagged her tail amiably, knowing that this was the place where she received those juicy tidbits and gristly beef bones.
Yes, Tip. We won't forget you. Good old girl.
Pim threw off his implements and wares and trundled them into a corner. He sat down with the innkeeper, and Em served them up a little stew and bread. Otho fetched frothy ale in crockery jars and joined them. They talked of all that had happened since Pim's last visit, and all the customers who would need Pim's services. Before long, however, their conversation turned to the one subject on everyone's minds and on the tips of everyone's tongues in every gathering place in Ascalon.
Shocking! Simply shocking! I can't imagine who would want to harm that beautiful boy, poor Prince Garin.
Nor who'd be fool enough to go again the Dragon King. There's the mystery. Him and that sword of his, enchanted and all.
They all shook their heads in bewilderment at the affairs that had befallen their king.
You were on the road, Pim. Did you see anything?
Pears I come too late.
Pim was of half a mind to tell them about the dead man on the road and about the sword, but even though they were his friends, he thought better of it and kept that a secret.
"'Twas over before we uns got to Pelgrin. Though, of course, we met lots of folks on the road to tell.
Oh, there's talk of plenty there is. Most of it not worth a thimble of mud. They say it was the Harry as got the boy prince. Others say it was some of that swill-belly Nins cravens who've been hiding up in the mountains all these years. Bah! That lot was driven into the sea at Lance Point, every last one of them they were. Strange, though, how nobody's seen hand nor hair of them that took him. 'Tis very like the earth opened up and swallowed them whole, quick as you please.
Nobody's seen nothing.
I saw the king this morning on the road. Well, at least I thought it was the king. Looked the king to me.
Likely did, likely did. Ham, the butcher, says the king rode in this morning all a lather. Been riding like a wraith for days.
Did he have his sword when you saw him?
What a question! Of course he did! The Dragon King never goes anywhere without that sword. That's what makes him invincible.
That's not what I heard. I heard from Glenna, the Queen's maidservant.
Glenna's Otho's sweetheart works in the royal kitchen.
Otho threw a warning glance in his mother's direction, but hurried on.
There's talk in the castle that the king has lost his sword.
What? Lost his sword? Bah!
I never would. Lose the shining one? Never!
Otho nodded. His eyes squinted.
He rode out with it the day of the hunt. Everyone in Mensendor saw it. Its great golden hilt gleaming from the scabbard at his side. We all saw it, but no one saw it when it returned.
What happened to it?
No one knows, but they say that if the Jalakir is gone, the kingdom is ruined.
Pshaw! Who would believe it?
It could well be. Could well be.
The king is still the king, isn't he?
Aye. As long as he holds the sword, that sword is his power. Without it, he's doomed.
Doomed?
Aye, and you would be too. There's some as says that Quentin isn't the rightful king, not being blood and all.
He was chosen by the gods!
Chosen he was, but it was the sword that backed it up. It is the work of the gods. They're angry with this new temple of his. They don't like his chasing after that new god, that Most High. The old gods are going to humble him as an example to the old kingdom to return to true worship with gifts and supplications.
Otho crossed his long arms and leaned back in his chair, smug in his rightness in the matter. The others looked at one another helplessly. Who was there to dispute what they had heard? If this was a matter between gods, who could intercede on behalf of mere mortals? Who could contest the gods? Once there was a resolute young man with a flaming sword who had the very hand of a god upon him. He was strong, invincible. But he too had proven only human, subject to the wounds and errors of all flesh. How fickle the gods were. They had allowed him to prosper for a season. Now they wanted their tribute, and even the Dragon King would have to bend before them. Blazing Sword or not, they meant to have their due, and the king could not refuse them. The glittering dreams of the Priest King and his wonderful City of Light were just smoke after all. Men were just the playthings of the gods. So it had ever been, and so would ever be. If not for the urgency of their errand, Bria would have enjoyed the journey to Dekra. The days wore the golden green mantle of fair summer. Peace clothed the land and seemed to blossom from every bough. The dark deeds of only a short time ago, a few days, receded into the past, more and more remote with every league. Only the throbbing ache in her heart reminded her that all was not well, that her son had been taken from her, that her world would never be right until he was returned. By day, she rode with the others, keeping her spirits high, talking, singing, or steeping herself in the beauty of the day. By night, she prayed. Her prayers were not for herself, but for her son and her husband, that the Most High would keep them safe wherever they were. And sometimes in the night, when no one could see her, she wept. The queen and her companions, though unused to the rigors of the road, were well looked after by Wilkins and the other two knights, and were made as comfortable as possible. And owing to the smoothness of the king's highway, they moved swiftly toward their destination.
Today we will cross beyond Selbacor's wall.
The group was several leagues from the camp of their night before. Though the sun was only a few hours up, they had stopped to eat some breakfast and to let the princesses gather wildflowers.
Have we come that far? I thought the journey would be much longer.
Before the King's Road, yes. Quentin's work in extending the highway has made travel to this part of the kingdom the easier and more quickly done. We may reach Dekra by evening tomorrow if we hurry.
Alenia pointed to the east and south, where the mountains lifted their heads to the clouds.
Selbacor's wall runs from the sea into those hills of rocks. Once beyond it, Dekra is only 2 days' ride.
Oh, then let us hurry by all means. I have always wanted to visit Dekra. You have told me so much about it, I cannot wait to see it.
It is indeed a most remarkable place.
Priya gazed into the distance as if she were looking for the sweeping towers of the city to rise above the horizon.
The Aragar were a noble and beautiful people. Theirs is a city like no other.
Yes, and much changed since I first saw it.
Alenia began to tell them about the occasion of her first visit, the flight to Dekra in the dead of winter with Thedwen Derwin, Quentin, and Tren. The wild midnight ride to the wall, just ahead of the Harriers. Quentin's near-fatal tangle with the poisoned talons of a Harrier's hawk, and their anxious vigil over him as he lapsed into death-like sleep upon reaching the ancient ruined city. The extraordinary love and kindness of the Kuratak who healed him. When she finished, Esme's lovely features held a mesmerized look.
I have never heard the story before. Oh, a piece of it here and there, but to hear it now like this...
She turned admiring eyes upon Alenia.
You were very brave, my lady. You and the others. It is a most remarkable tale. Now I want to see Dekra all the more.
They rode on, following the road through wooded hills and pleasant lowlands, green and fragrant in the sun. Sometimes they met farmers leading ox-drawn carts or other travelers, merchants on foot or in wagons, riders speeding on hurried errands to distant parts of the realm. But most often they had the road to themselves for long stretches. Selbacor's wall, that singular enduring feat of strength and cunning, grew as they approached. First, a thin line crossing the far hills, gray in the distance, with no more substance than a bank of low-lying clouds. Closer, it loomed high and strong, rising from the crown of hills with solid force, the sun shining full on its blank stern face. The road bent along the face of the wall toward the Malmar Inlet. The travelers rode down the long wooded slope to the rocky shore of the inlet. There they stopped, watered the horses, and waited.
How will the ferrymen know to come for us?
Watch.
One of the knights had made his way along the shore to a tall pine pole standing in a heap of stones. There he fastened a red pennon to a cord attached to the pole and raised the pennon to the top, where it waved smartly in the breeze.
You see? We have only to wait a little. The ferryman will see the signal and come at once.
Clever!
It was Quentin's idea. When he used to travel frequently between Ascalon and Dekra, it was often difficult to find a boat on this side of the inlet. So he established the ferry hopping.
They sat on the warm rocks, taking in the pleasures of the day. In a little while, they saw a wide, flat boat plying toward them across the water. The ferryman brought the boat into the narrow rock-lined channel that had been cut into the shore.
Good day, my ladies. Good day for travel. Going to Dekra, is it?
The ferryman eyed them each with good-natured curiosity.
Yes, we are.
Allow me to fetch you across first, if you please. Then I will return for the coach and horses.
Thank you, Roll.
The man turned and looked at her carefully.
Do what? It is... I'm sorry, my lady. Your Highness, I did not recognize you.
Roll bowed quickly, reddening with embarrassment.
It has been some time, and I am hardly dressed the part of a queen.
Now, my lady.
Roll said no more, but went quickly to his work. In no time, the passengers were sitting on the broad benches at the bow. Wilkins stayed behind with the animals and the coach. Roll worked the long oar with his wide, strong hands, and the ferry moved out slowly into the deeper channel, floating to meet the current that would carry them across the water. At Malmarby, their arrival was greeted by a score of people who flocked to the docks to see the strangers. Travelers were still not so common an occurrence that they did not draw amiable stares from the common folk.
I was deeply distressed to hear about what happened to young Prince Geryn.
Roll led them up a long planked ramp.
You have heard, then. Now you know why we ride to Dekra.
Everyone has heard, my lady. Some of us have gone to the hunt. I was there when... We know what you must feel. But the Dragon King will find the evil stakes that did this. I know.
We are praying for the prince every moment.
Oh, yes, my lady. Perhaps they can help at Dekra. There is much power there.
Thank you, Roll.
If you'd excuse me, milady.
Roll bowed again and shoved the boat back out into the inlet. In no time at all, he was back with the coach and horses. The queen and her entourage remounted and moved on.
I'll be here when you return.
The travelers passed through Malmarby and entered the marshy lowlands beyond. The country in Obrey was wilder, more spare and open. It changed at once from that on the other side of the inlet, becoming a more forbidding place, so that the traveler might well feel he had left the hospitable world behind and entered a land untamed and unpredictable, where anything might happen.
The coach can go no further!
Little more than a league out of Malmarby, the track had all but vanished. Wilkins had just returned from surveying the trail ahead.
Even on horseback, it will not be easy.
I had quite forgotten how wild this land is. What do you advise?
Leave the coach. One of your bodyguards can ride one of the coach horses and I the other. Elenia can take the knight's mount and the princess can ride with me.
Let me take one of them, at least.
And I the other.
Wilkins' comrade dismounted and offered his saddle to Elenia, who accepted.
Thank you. It has been too long since I have ridden bareback, and I do not think I could manage the feat now.
Wilkins and the first knight began unhitching the horses, then rearranged the baggage, distributing the necessary items among the riders and abandoning the rest along with the coach, which they hid in a bower of young maple saplings and wild ivy. When they had finished, all were mounted once more, and they continued on their way happily, if more slowly.
My lord.
The chamberlain poked his head through the door.
Lord Thedo and Lord Ronsart have come. They ask that you receive them at once, sire.
Quentin sat slumped in his huge chair, staring into the cold ashes on the hearth before him. His eyes were red from lack of sleep. His hair was in disarray, and his features coarse and haggard.
Send them away. I will see no one.
But, sire, they insist...
How many times must I tell you?
The chamberlain quickly closed the door, but within moments it was opened again. In came Thedo, with Ronsard close on his heels.
My lord, we would speak with you.
We did not think it right that you closet yourself thus, receiving no one.
It seems you give me no choice.
Quentin did not so much as turn his eyes toward them. but continued staring into the ashes as if they were the ashes of his own life, now dead and spent.
This is not like you, Quentin.
See?
The truth. I am no king. And never was. I only played at being a king, and my friends humored me as they would a child. Where is my son?
One look at his fearful countenance and both men inwardly gasped. So great was the change that had occurred since they had seen their friend last. Gone was the youthful man, full of vigor and quick strength, keen-eyed and alert, always sharp as the point of a lance, and eagerly winging through life with a reckless vitality of an eagle soaring above the clouds for the sheer joy of soaring. This man before them appeared as one who had lived in darkness for years, bereft of hope, and brittle with despair. One wrong word, and he might collapse upon himself in tears, or fly into a foaming rage.
The men are combing the hills and villages beyond Peldrin. We will find him, sire.
We would have come sooner, but I...
Ronsard's voice failed him, and he turned away.
Go away. My lord, we would speak to you as friends, please. I ask as a friend, hear us.
Friends! Where is my son?
He will be found. Trust in it, he will be found.
The Dragon King shot an angry look at the two knights.
Trust in it! He says to trust that my son will be found. Trust, huh? Trust what? Trust you? Trust the Most High, huh? There is nothing that a man can trust. Everything deserts him in the end. Youth fades, love grows old. The works of his hands disintegrate and are torn apart by his enemies.
The king lurched up out of his chair.
The gods, my friends, the gods! Sooner trust in the weather. It is less fickle than they. The gods taunt a man, build him up so they may laugh at him when they dash him under the wheels of misfortune. Gnat sport! See how he writhes and tears at his flesh! See how his heart turns upon itself! See how his pain devours him!
Thedo and Ronsard could only stare at this tirade.
The Most High. Do not speak to me of the Most High. He is more subtle and more wicked than all the rest. He tortures his victims with dreams and visions of glory. He prophesies and promises. He delivers their enemies into their hands and raises them up far beyond the rightful place. And then he takes it all away. Takes the man's very heart out of him, strips him of all he holds dear in life, and casts him bleeding into the darkness. That is the Most High God of gods. And fool is he who trusts in him.
Quentin staggered, holding his head, and fell back into his chair, exhausted. A stunned silence hung like a pall over the room. Ronsard touched Thedo on the arm, nodded toward the door, and the two left, quietly.
Would that Derwin were here. He would know what to do. I miss that old hermit.
Aye, and so do I. But we must do the best we can. The kingdom depends upon it, I think.
What shall we do? Until the prince is recovered, there is nothing to be done.
No. I perceive there is more to his torture than the prince's disappearance.
Or Derwin's death?
Or Derwin's death. Though both of those weigh heavy on him now, I believe he could rise above them if not for his loss of faith in the Most High.
What can we do about that?
Find the sword. Find the sword and return it to him before someone else takes it for himself.
I am all for it, sir. Only tell me how to do it, and it will be done.
I would tell you if I knew. Count on it. I only know that we must recover the sword, and soon.
Thedo put his chin in his hand and stood for a few moments in deep thought. Ronsard watched him and waited.
Ronsard, you must go alone and begin the search.
And you?
I will stay here, close to the king. He may need a stout companion nearby.
As you say, Thedo. But where shall I start?
That is the puzzle. But I think I have a plan that will be useful to us. Are you game to try?
I will do anything.
Good. Then come with me. There is no time to lose.
The first thing Tully felt as consciousness returned was something cool running down the side of his neck. He raised a hand and felt the side of his head where the trickle started. The movement brought a throb of pain to his aching head.
Tully,
Are you alive?
Tully opened his eyes carefully, then squeezed them shut again quickly.
Just lie back. Do not move.
In a moment, the throb in Tully's head eased somewhat, and he opened his eyes, shielding them with his hand. The bare stone room was dim. The light slanted down in a single brilliant band from a narrow window high up in the wall. He lay on a straw pallet on the floor opposite the window. He turned his head to the side. His vision wavered, but he made out the form crouching beside him on folded knees.
Prince Garen! What did they do to my head?
They dumped you in here. I was afraid you were dead.
When was that?
Tully pushed himself up slowly on his elbows.
Do you not remember?
Garen offered a bit of cloth soaked with water. Tully took it and placed it against his forehead.
I remember nothing. No, I remember coming to the temple and asking to see the high priest. I saw him. I think talked with him. The next thing I know, I am waking up here.
The high priest?
Yes.
Is that where we are? The temple?
It must be.
Tully looked around the cell and at the door, which was not the door of a castle dungeon, though it was heavy oak and strong enough to keep a prisoner from breaking free.
Did you not know where you were taken?
No, it was dark, and they blindfolded me. It seems we walked for days. Then I was shoved in here, days ago. That is the blindfold you are holding.
Garen indicated the damp rag.
I see. How many days?
3, I think. Maybe 4. Yes, 4. 2 before you came.
I have been here 2 days?
This is the second. How do you feel?
I will live.
He reached out a hand and patted the young prince on the shoulder.
You have done well, young sir. I am glad to see you alive. How have they treated you?
Well enough. I am fed from their table and have good water.
Garen looked eagerly at his friend, glad to have someone he knew with him, though both were prisoners.
Tully, what has happened?
I scarcely know.
I know about Derwin. I have been worried for Father.
He is well. He is searching for you, for us. Ronsard and Thedo, too.
Garen had been brave for so long. Now that a friend was here, he could let down. The tears washed down his face. Tully put an arm around the boy's slim shoulders.
It is good to cry. He was your friend. There is no shame in tears of mourning. I do not know why this has happened, but there is some evil behind it. You may be certain. Priests do not leave the temple to murder and kidnap the innocent. That is, they have never done so before. Why? Why they should start now, I cannot say. But we must find out what it is they plan. Think now. What did you see?
The prince was silent for some moments.
There were 6 of them. 5 of them swordsmen and 1 other the leader. I heard them talking about him.
What did they say?
They do not like him much. That is all. And the one who told about Derwin, he said that the king had killed one of them in the road.
Garen looked at Tully questioningly.
It is true. In his grief and rage, your father struck down one of the kidnappers on the road. That is on his heart, too. Well, it is done. Perhaps there is yet some better purpose behind it. We must hope so.
The two talked and gave each other comfort. The day, measured by the slanting band of light as it moved across the floor and up the opposite wall of the cell, stretched on. Toward evening, a priest came with 2 bowls of water and a large trencher of food. The door was opened, the food slipped in, and the door closed.
This is how the food is brought?
Yes, every day. I think they are afraid I will try to escape.
Have you tried to escape?
Once on the road. Taki reared and I fell, or was grabbed. That is when he ran away. It was not far from here.
A horse with Taki's sense can find his way back home. Someone will catch him and take him to the king. Either way, I believe someone will soon think to look for us in this direction. The king will find us. You will see.
Garen nodded, but said nothing. Tully patted his shoulder.
Never fear, young sir. I will not let anything happen to you.
The words almost stuck in his throat.
Though it cost my life,
I will not fail you again.
The peasant leaned against the bar.
A jar of your dark, if you please, sir. Are you the inn master?
Aye, I am the keeper, but my wife is the master.
Milcher gave the man a great wink.
Dark it is, and the best in all Menzendor, some say. I myself prefer it.
The innkeeper turned away for a moment to fill the jar, and the man took advantage of the lapse to study the interior of the inn. The Grey Goose was filled tonight. There was a hubbub of conversation, which was normal, but this overlaid a churning current of excitement. An atmosphere of expectancy thickened in the place, as dense as the smoke from the pipes of the patrons, which curled toward the low-beamed ceiling. Ronsard had felt it the moment he walked in, this tingly, anxious suspense. It was as if they were all gathered there waiting for something to happen, knowing that something would happen, wanting it to happen. Secure now in his disguise as a peasant, there was little chance of discovery. He was not a frequenter of inns and did not live in Ascalon any longer, so it was unlikely he would meet anyone he knew. Ronsard turned back to Milcher, who was laying the pewter jar on the board.
A strange mood tonight, eh?
Aye, for the last 2 nights.
How so?
Have you been out of the country, man? The kidnapping, the king's sword lost? There is wickedness about, my friend. Folks do well to look to themselves, if you know what I mean.
I heard about the kidnapping, but what is this about the king's sword? I know nothing of that.
Oh, the king's sword is gone. No one knows where. It is said the king will fall. Without the sword, it cannot stand.
You cannot mean the Shining One?
One and the same. Yes, that's the one. What other sword would it be?
Milcher turned to the other man working at the bar.
Otho, come here!
Otho lumbered up and fixed Ronsard with a look of benign appraisal.
Yes?
Otho, tell this fellow about the king's enchanted sword.
Otho was not tired of relating his knowledge, though he had done little else since he heard it. With enthusiasm, he embroidered on the scant details he possessed, embellishing them to lend his tale extra color.
I see what you mean. This could be bad, very bad indeed. I am glad I'm not the king.
His fish is flayed, as they say. I do not think he will be king for long. There's much talk against him now.
I have not heard such talk.
He's just beginning. There was a man in here last night, white-bearded fellow from the north, out of Albury. He said that people there are afraid of the Dragon King's new god, this Most High of his. They're arming to protect the temples.
Protect their temples from what?
From the king. The Dragon King has sent men to pull down the temples.
Otho nodded knowingly, his round face glowing with pleasure at having such a dull-witted and uninformed listener.
Aye, I've been hearing the same.
Who is this man, this one, who is saying these things?
He was in here last night. Told us all about it. If you wait a bit, he may be back. I think he said he would come back tonight if he was still in Ascalon.
Milcher swept his eyes over the crowds lining the benches and hunched over the tables of his establishment.
I do not see him now, but he may come later.
Ronsard took up his jar.
I will wait in that case. I want to hear what he has to say. Point him out to me when he comes.
They had come upon the ruined city in the setting sun. The red stone of Dekra glimmered like ruby in the crimson twilight, its delicate spires and finger-thin towers rising toward the deep blue heavens. The city seemed to have magically appeared, dropped out of the sky into the wilderness, a thing of charmed creation.
This is Dekra. I have never seen anything like it. It is so different.
It is a strange beauty, very unlike the cities we build. The Auriga used many building methods unknown to us.
There has been much accomplished here since last I set eyes upon it. That was long ago. But Quentin has told me that the work goes on apace. Yes, much has been done.
They rode to the gates of Dekra, now closed against the night. But upon reaching the huge tiled gates, a stoop-shouldered man appeared, popping his head through the smaller gate door cut in one side of the much greater panel. He disappeared again, quick as a blink.
Visitors! Open the gates! Visitors!
I am sorry to have shut you out. We did not expect visitors this night, or I would have left them open for you. Come in, come in. Welcome to Dekra.
The travelers all dismounted, glad to be free of the saddle. The man closed the gates once more, and then hurried to the visitors.
Have you ridden far, good people?
From Ascalon.
All is well in Ascalon, I hope. It is a far ride. You must be very tired.
The man peered at them with kindly eyes, glad to see these visitors who would bring some news of the rest of the kingdom.
I have sent a boy to bring an elder. I am sure he will want to receive you properly.
At that moment, they looked up to see the young boy, followed by a man in a long mantle, coming swiftly toward them. Behind him were several others who had dropped what they were doing in order to come and make the visitors welcome.
Ah, Alenia, Bria, how good to see you again. Oh, this is a joyous surprise. Look, the queen has come, and Alenia.
Alenia looked at the man, trying to remember him. Bria stepped up just then.
Mother, you certainly remember Elder Jolin.
Oh, yes, I remember him well. It has been a long time. I am much surprised you remember me.
Not as long as all that. To look at you, you have not changed a bit. You are still as lovely as ever you were. And Bria, if not for your mother standing here beside you, I would declare you were her. So much alike you are. Flowers of the same bud.
You do flatter us, sir.
No flattery, my queen. It is the truth.
Jolin's eyes turned to Esme, standing nearby.
You must be the lovely Esme, of whom so many good things have been spoken.
I am honored, sir, and much impressed, for surely we have never met.
No, but it is not difficult to guess your identity. I remember an occasion or two when Bria told me about her friend. I knew when I saw you that you must be she. Welcome.
Jolin turned his eyes to Wilkins and the knights.
Welcome, good friends all. May you find in Dekra that which you seek.
There was silence for a moment.
Now then, the governor's palace is ready for you. My wife instructs me that you are to dine with us this night. But take your time. Refresh yourselves from your trip. Some of the young people will go along to help you settle your belongings.
Thank you, Jolin. But I feel already revived, having just set foot in Dekra. We will join you soon.
Excellent. Go along now. I will invite the other elders to join us after the meal, and we will talk with your permission.
Yes, please do. I would have suggested it. I think it will be best.
It is good to be here again. I had forgotten how it lifts the heart, and how much I have missed it without knowing what it was I longed for.
Then I am glad you have come. Perhaps you may stay a long while, my lady. Yes, I am glad you have come.
The visitors were immediately swept up and away by the happy inhabitants of Dekra, and led to the old governor's palace in the heart of the restored section of the city, in a procession that wound through the narrow paved streets of the ancient ruin. All along the way, Kuratok stopped to watch them pass. Esme gazed in wonder at all she saw. Everything appeared so foreign and so strange. The walls of buildings, all aglow in the setting sun, shone with colored tiles, mosaics of the life of the vanished Araga. Great arches and long colonnades of graceful spiral columns, all carved from the same gleaming red stone, gave the appearance of a majestic, exalted race. The simple, sweeping lines of their architecture spoke to her of lofty purpose and a nobility of heart and mind. The effect was singular, so simple, and yet so right. Yes, that was the word. There was a rightness about things here, a wholeness. A wholeness of what? She did not know yet. It was only upon seeing and experiencing Dekra that one noticed the aching lack in the rest of the world. All around her, the Kuratok were like happy children, glad to see them, to receive visitors. She felt their eagerness splash over her like spring rain, reviving her, warming her. She felt the great lump of buried ice she had carried so long in her heart begin to thaw and melt.
Oh, what a wonderful, fantastic place. I am glad I came. Truly, this is the city of gods. I never want to leave.
To Pym, the inside of Ascalon Castle was utterly and inexpressibly remote. like a castle of the gods in the far mountains. He had often seen the high forbidding walls rising from the great crown of rock on which the castle was founded, and had as often wondered what the inside looked like. Of course, he had been through the gates on occasion, on his visits to the kitchens where he did business with the king's staff, but never had he been invited into the castle itself, and the close proximity served to heighten rather than diminish his curiosity. But now it appeared he would be allowed through the inner gates and into the halls and chambers beyond, perhaps even to stand in the great hall of the Dragon King.
Oh, all right now, Tip. You'n's be a good girl, and I'll be back before you know it.
Pim was forced to leave the dog in the inner ward yard and turned to wait for the chamberlain, who would conduct him inside. He had come at dusk, after his day's work was finished, thinking that kings worked sun up to sundown like other men, and that he would have a better chance of an audience when the king's daily labors were done. Ordinarily, Oswald, son of Oswald the Elder, who had died some years ago, following the death of Escobar, would not have dreamed of letting the little tinker inside the castle, but would have sent him straight away to the kitchens. But he was overwhelmed with anxiety for the king. Quentin had sunk further into depression and did not stir from his stuffy chamber, which he now kept sealed and dark as a tomb. Oswald feared for the king. Even Theda had been powerless to effect any change in the king's behavior, so anything was worth a try. Even a tinker who came to the gates intent on seeing the king, seeing he had important information for him, information which only the Dragon King himself could hear.
I am Oswald, the king's chamberlain. What do you want?
Pim, sitting on a stone bench just under the archway of the main castle entrance, stood up quickly and came forward.
Good sir, if you please be as kind as to bring me to the king, we have a pressing matter to set afore its highness.
The king sees no one who will not state his business to me.
Oh, that I cannot say, sir. It is for the king. But I can tell you that much.
Yes?
It be very important. Aye, very important. That's what it is, yes.
And what does this important information concern?
It be for the king, sir, and not for no one else.
Oswald could see that the man was adamant about an audience with the king. He looked harmless enough. And who could say but that the tinker might indeed have something that could be useful to his master? Well, that seemed highly unlikely. Still, there was a possibility, and in this dark time, even the minutest chances might be snatched at.
What is your name, sir?
Pim, sir. Pim 'tis, and Pim it always twill be.
Very well, Pim. Although it is not my proper course to admit you like this, I will. But if you waste the king's time and my own with worthless drivel or idle rumor such as is heard in any village Makra Inn, I will have you removed promptly. Do you understand? You will never become welcome in Ascalon again.
Oswald looked at the tinker sharply.
Now then, do you still want to see His Majesty?
I do, sir.
Do you still maintain that your information is vital and for his ears alone?
'Tis, sir.
Follow me.
With that, Oswald the Younger turned on his heel and walked away. Pim hesitated.
Well, are you coming?
Pim nodded and hurried after the chamberlain. They marched along a wide, polished corridor where servants moved, hurrying about their chores. To Pim, the smooth stone walls and oak-beamed ceiling seemed things of enchanted origin. He marveled at even the most commonplace furnishings he glimpsed along the way, for they were royal furnishings. This was the home of the Dragon King, and these were the Dragon King's chattel. Past countless doorways they went, past halls, each with huge carven doors and galleries hung with giant tapestries of rich design. Upstairs and downstairs they went, deeper and deeper into the heart of the castle. And with every step, Pim grew more excited. He was to see the king. Finally, they stopped in a short passageway of paneled oak, the royal apartments. Oswald led them to a door which bore the carved and red-lacquered figure of a terrible, twisting dragon. The chamberlain put his hand to the latch.
Wait here. I will announce you.
Pim, with palms sweating now, wiped his hands on the backside of his pants, shifted first on one foot, then on the other. Perhaps it was a mistake. Perhaps it would be better to tell the chamberlain and let him decide if the king should hear his story. Yes, without a doubt. Let the chamberlain decide. But before Pim could change his mind, Oswald reappeared, and he was yanked inside. Oswald took him through this first room, past chairs and a great long table piled high with many scrolls of plans for buildings, and a gleaming suit of armor standing on its frame, and to a door at the further end, to the king's inner chamber. Oswald pushed Pym in.
Sire, Pym the Tinker to see you.
The door cut off his only escape. Pym tottered forward on shaky knees, his eyes unused to the darkness, his mind reeling in the awesome knowledge that he was in the presence of the mighty Dragon King. It was almost more than he could endure. As evening came on, the inn grew crowded and the conversation more intense. Amidst the clink of ale jars in the hazy, murk-filled room, Ronsard, in his disguise as an ordinary laborer, listened and watched all that took place around him. Something was at work. He could sense it, feel it. What was more, all gathered at the Grey Goose could feel it too. A heightened impatience, a simmering restlessness seethed just below the surface. Expectation, at first casual, had been drawn tighter and tighter until it hummed like a bowstring. Anticipation quivered in every voice, danced in every eye. Tonight, there would be trouble. Ronsard had seen moods like this before in crowds of men. On the battlefield, it could send troops into a foaming fury to drive the enemy into flight. It could just as easily turn back on itself and ignite flames of fear, causing even field-proven veterans to abandon their arms in mortal terror. Which way it turned depended on the leader.
But who is the leader here? That white-bearded traveler the innkeeper mentioned?
Ronsard drifted unseen from table to table, listening here and there to what was said, trying to determine not only what sparked this unnatural mood, but also what course it would take when it broke.
Oh, tell me, Goldzerang, 'tis the fault of the king. Any man, blind or not, can see that plain enough.
It's no good going against him, no good at all.
Dangerous it is, dangerous.
Something must be done.
The sword is lost, did you hear? The Jalakir is lost.
Oi, there's trouble coming. It's brought us nothing but trouble. What's wrong with the old ways?
Old ways are the best, by the gods.
The shining one gone, what can it mean?
The kingdom is without a king. That's what it means!
So the voices went. And of all the gossip Ronsard heard, one item concerned him more than any other. They knew about the missing sword. The king's enemies would know soon, if not already. And then the infighting would start. Would Quentin be equal to it? Ordinarily, yes. But not now. Not in his present condition. Ronsard settled back along a rear bench and watched the room, as one would watch a cauldron beginning to boil. Would this stranger, this Longbeard, show himself? What if he did not come? What would happen? What would happen if he did appear? That was more to be feared. Ronsard stood and was about to return his long empty ale jar to the bar when Longbeard appeared. Ronsard did not see or hear him. Rather, he knew the man had appeared by the sudden tension in the room, the thrill that tingled in the dank, smoky air.
Oh, he's here.
There he is. That's the one I told you about.
Ah, yes, here he is.
Now we'll find out what to do.
Longbeard will tell us what to do.
The whispers swirled around the gnarled old man like dry leaves around a bent old tree. Longbeard moved into them easily. If he understood the sensation his sudden appearance had caused, he showed no outward sign of it. Ronsard watched him walk to the center of the room, making his way to the bar. All eyes were on the old man, with the flowing white hair and beard, watching, waiting.
Longbeard! Have you seen him?
Seen whom?
Longbeard turned toward the voice.
Yes, I have just come from his chambers.
Will he change his mind?
No, he will not change his mind.
Well, we must take matters into our own hands.
Tell us what to do.
Longbeard held up his hands.
It is not for me to tell you what to do. I am but a simple man like yourselves. I know not the ways of minds of gods or kings.
The knowledge stung Ronsard like the blow from the flat of a sword. The king. He was talking about the king. Quentin was the he this Longbeard mentioned. But how was this possible? It was improbable that this white-bearded old stranger had been allowed to see the king. The Dragon King had shut himself in his rooms and would see no one, not even his closest friends, as Ronsard well knew. Yet the implication was plain.
I have been to see the king, and he will not change his mind. Change his mind about what? What game was this twisted old root playing? What was his aim? I must speak to him alone. I must take him out of here some way, and take him where we can talk without being overheard. There are too many people here. The situation could get out of hand.
Tear it, King Templeton! By all the gods, yes! Tear it, go!
In an instant, every man in the room was on his feet, fists in the air.
This, then, is the spark that ignites the flame. But there must be a way to stop it.
Ronsard glanced around for a place to stand, saw an empty table nearby, and jumped up on it.
Friends, listen to me! Listen to me! Friends, what you propose to do is wrong. It is very dangerous as well. Some of you could get hurt very badly, maybe even killed. It is no small thing to go against a king. Do you think he will not defend his temple? How many of you would make your wives widows this night?
Ronsard noticed that some of the eyes slid away from his uneasily.
Good. This is working. But I must give them something now. Let us instead send a petition before the king. We will demand that he account to us for the raising of this temple. The petition can be our voice.
Hot heads were cooling under Ronsard's sobering logic. He drew a sleeve across his face to wipe away the sweat.
Please, for your own sakes and for your families, let us all sit down together and draw up the petition.
When?
At once, here and now.
And then?
And then I will take it to the king personally.
Lies! Lies! Do any of you know this man? You see, he is one of the king's men. I saw him when I went to see the king this evening. He was there. The king has sent him here as a spy among us.
No! It's not true! I only want to help you!
King's man?
It is true, I am a friend of the king, but I am no less your friend. I am warning you, do not go against him in this matter. Do not take
Ronsard was pitched to the floor. A boot lashed out and struck him in the ribs. A fist caught him behind the ear. Ronsard struggled for his feet. Suddenly, feet and fists pummeled him from all directions. Ronsard rolled into a ball to protect himself, throwing his arms over his head. A table crashed to the floor nearby, scattering ale jars. A heartbeat later, light exploded behind his closed eyelids. His limbs jerked convulsively, and he lay still.
The Dragon King Trilogy, The Sword in the Flame Part 1 is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2011, Stephen Lawhead. Published by arrangement with Thomas Nelson Incorporated, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2011 by The Cutting Corporation Incorporated, all rights reserved. With performances by Thomas Keegan, David Coyne, Dylan Lynch, Joe Brack, Andy Clements, Tim Getman, Karen Novak, Elizabeth Jernigan, James Konacek, Terrence Aselford, Scott McCormick, Michael Glenn, Christopher Sheeran, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Stephen Carpenter, James Lewis, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Christopher Graybill, Johan Detweiler, and Michael John Casey. Adapted and directed by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detlein. If you enjoyed The Sword in the Flame, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon War saga and Brent Weeks' Night Angel trilogy. Available now in graphic audio, at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio material.
Graphic Audio presents E.E. Knights, Vampire Earth.
Gate codes, is that what you want? There's a spare back door key.
I don't want access to Weathercut. I wanted you out of it, Franklin.
But I'm nobody important. I don't even have my own room.
That's the problem with being a nobody important. Somebody might decide you're disposable. Kind of like that teenage girl back in Arkansas. The one you, Bernardo Gutierrez, Tom Cray, and Sergeant Heath Hopkins raped and then killed.
No! I mean, you got the wrong guy!
No!
What kind of op is this?
We're clearing this housing complex. D-O-E-R.
Of what?
Destruction of enemy resources. You can't stand to actually see a doer?
Enemy resources? You mean the population?
Without a population to feed on, the Kurians pull out.
No objections, I hope.
Objections? Hell yes! For starters...
Hop off your high horse, Valentine. Clearing operations work. Your old man invented him, after all.
He's hot. Sir, is he entering up as a bear?
No. I simply opened the channels. He shouldn't have the biological resource. Wait. Design, help us. I forgot. Oh, me. Your father was a bear, I believe.
I think so.
You may have had the talent passed down to you.
We better isolate.
Oh, and he needs calm now more than anything. Oh, me, I've been a fool, careless. I expect he'll go mad.
You, at the other end, talk, or I make your puppet into a corn dog. Stop it.
Do you want?
Are you Seattle? The head honcho?
No, I am but a keeper.
I want to talk to your chief. King. Grand and exalted overlord, whatever he calls himself. The one in the big tower. Tell him I have an offer.
What could a human give such as he?
Adler. The leader of the resistance.
Vampire Earth, Book 6, Valentine's Resolve.
Available now in graphic audio.
What's up?
I've got a case. I need you, Danny.
She pushed the file toward me. There were homicide Lay's photos. Gods above, when was this?
4 months ago. Look past the body.
My eyes moved over the picture. A pile of something wrinkled laid off to one side. Is that what I think? Oh, don't tell me it is.
The fucker flayed her.
I don't want to remember Rigor Hall. I have done very well for years without remembering.
Welcome to the House of Pain.
Have a nice night.
It is extremely unlikely.
Rigor Hall.
I swore I'd never go back.
Dante Valentine, Book 2, Dead Man Rising, Part 1, is available now in graphic audio.
Remember Rigger Hall.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.